is designing one for me. She looks down at her fingers and adds, I asked my dad to pay for it.
He's happy with that? She nods.
I think he's relieved he's not footing the bill for the wedding, but he's delighted he can contribute.
I grin. Anastasia Steele, you're brilliant. I knew you'd find a compromise. You are such a good negotiator. I lean over and give her a peck on her lips.
Hungry?
She asks.
Yes. I'll cook us some steaks. So, the panic rooms, how will they work?
Anna asks as she slices into her filet mignon. There's one going into Taylor's office, and our bedroom closet will become one, too. Press a button and the doors will close, and they'll be impenetrable. There'll be enough time for help to arrive. That's the plan, anyway.
Oh.
Anna blanches. I clutch her hand. It's merely a precaution. Here's hoping we never have to use them. I raise my glass of Pinot Noir and release her.
I'll drink to that.
She clinks my glass with hers. Don't look so worried. I will do everything in my power to keep you safe.
It's not me I'm worried about, Christian. You know that. How is the investigation going?
Not fast enough, which is frustrating. But don't think about it. My team is on it. I don't want to trouble Anna with our lack of progress. That steak was delicious. I put down my knife and fork.
Thank you,
she says, and pushes her empty plate aside. What shall we do now? I ask, and I pitch my voice low, hoping my intention is clear. We have the whole apartment to ourselves, something we don't have at home. Anna peers at me through her lashes.
I have an idea.
Her voice is soft and sultry and arousing. She skims her tongue across her top lip and places her hand on my knee. The air is almost crackling between us with my desire. Anna. She leans in, giving me a wonderful view of her cleavage, and she murmurs in my ear,
It will involve getting wet.
Oh. She runs her thumb up the inside of my thigh. Fuck.
Yes.
She leans in farther, her breath tickling my ear.
We could wash the dishes.
What? Tease. Well, this is unexpected and a challenge. I stifle my smile, and not taking my eyes off hers, I skim my index finger over her cheek to her chin, then down her throat and her sternum to the V in her dress. Her lips part as her breathing deepens. I pinch the soft fabric between my thumb and forefinger and tug, pulling her toward me. I have a better idea. She gasps. A much better idea. I continue.
What?
We could fuck.
Christian Grey!
I grin. I love shocking Anna. Or we could make love, I add. Smooth, Grey. Smooth.
I like your ideas better than mine.
Her voice is low and husky for real this time. Do you know?
Mm-hmm. I'll take option one.
Her eyes are smoky.
Anna, you goddess.
Good choice. Take that dress off now. Slowly. She stands up so that she's between my thighs, and I think she's going to do as she's told, but she bends her head and places her hands on my thighs, then caresses the corner of my mouth with her lips.
You do it,
she whispers against my skin, and every hair on my body stands to attention as desire heats my blood. As you wish, Miss Steele. I reach for the tie that holds her wrapped dress together and gently unravel the bow so that her dress falls open. Anna's not wearing a bra. Deep joy. I run my hands up her back as she cups my face and starts to kiss me. Her lips are insistent and her tongue demanding. I groan and close my eyes as we revel in each other's kiss, Her skin is soft beneath my fingers as I draw her closer, pressing her to my chest. Her hands twist in my hair, and she tugs, forcing my head up. Fuck. Anna takes my bottom lip between her teeth and pulls. Ow. Anna. I yank my head back and grab her wrists. You're a little wild, I whisper, awed. She shimmies between my legs, her nipples brushing against my shirt and hardening as I watch. Her hair falls over her shoulders and shrouds her breasts, while my pants grow tighter by the second. What has gotten into her? She's exhilarating, provocative. Are you teasing me? I ask. Yes. Take me. Oh, I will. Right here, when I'm ready. She gasps, eyes sultry and full of invitation, and I think she must have consumed more Pinot than I thought. Gently, I steer her backward and release her hands as I rise off my seat. I peer down at her as she studies me from beneath her long lashes. How about here? I pat the top of the stool. She blinks a couple of times as her lips part in surprise. Bend over, I whisper. Her teeth dig into her plump lip, leaving little indent marks, and I know she's doing this on purpose. I believe you requested option one, I remind her. I did. I won't ask you again. I unbutton my pants and slowly tug down my zipper, giving my erection some much-needed room. Anna stares at me, looking licentious and lovely, dressed only in her pretty open frock, a pair of white panties, and her high-heeled sandals. She raises her hands, and I think she's going to take her dress off. Leave it on, I insist. And reaching into my pants, I ease out my cock. Ready? I ask, and start to move my hand up and down, pleasuring myself. Her dark gaze strays from my hand to my face, and with a knowing smile, she turns and lies right over the stool. Grab the legs, I urge. And she does, wrapping her fingers around the iron struts. Her hair brushes the floor, and I move her dress so it hangs down her left side, leaving her glorious ass in view. Let's get rid of these, I murmur, and run a finger across her skin above the elastic of her underwear. I kneel and slowly drag them down her legs and over her shoes. I toss them to the side and take her ass in my hands and squeeze. You look mighty fine from this angle, Miss Steele, I whisper and kiss her butt. She squirms appropriately, and I can't help myself. I slap her hard so that she yelps, and I ease one finger inside her. Her moan is loud, and she strains her body, pushing against my hand. She wants this. She's wet. So wet. Anna, you never disappoint. I kiss her ass once more and stand up while moving my finger in, out, in, out. Legs wider, I order as I fondle her backside. She moves her feet. Wider. She shuffles them to the side until I'm satisfied. Perfect. Hold on, baby. I withdraw my hand and with infinite care slowly slide into her. She gasps. Fuck, she's heaven. I place my hand on her back, and with the other I clutch the edge of the kitchen counter. I do not want to topple us both. Hold on. I say once more and ease out of her, then slam into her. Ah! She cries. Too much? No, keep going, she whimpers. And her wish is my command. I start to fuck her, hard. Each stroke, each push takes me away from everything. All my strife, all my worries. There's only Anna. My girl, my lover, my light. She cries out, once, twice, three times, begging me for more, and I keep going,
taking her with me, taking her higher. On and on until she calls out a strangled, loud version of my name. And she comes over and over with the force of a spring tide. Anna! I cry and join her. I collapse over her, then drop to the floor, taking her with me and cradling her in my arms. I kiss her eyelids, her nose, her mouth, and she puts her arms around my neck. How was option one? I ask. She hums with a dazed smile. I grin. Same for me.
I'd like some more.
More?
Jesus, Anna.
She kisses my chest where my shirt is open, and I realize I'm still fully dressed.
Let's try the bed this time,
I whisper into her hair. Anna moans.
Please.
Her hands are fastened, courtesy of her robe tie, to the spindles of her bedstead. She's naked, her nipples long and hard and pointing skyward, courtesy of my lips and tongue. I have her feet in one hand, pushed up on the bed near her behind, so her legs are akimbo and she's straining for release. Slowly I ease my index finger in and out of her while my thumb circles her clitoris. She can't move. How's this? I ask.
Please.
She's hoarse. Do you like me to tease you?
Yes.
She cries. Do you like teasing me?
Yes.
I like it too. I stop my thumb and still my hand, my finger still inside her.
Christian, don't stop.
Tit for tat, Anastasia. She's endeavoring to push her hips up on my hand to find her release. Still, I whisper. Stay still. Her mouth is slack, eyes dark and full of lust and need and all a man could want.
Please,
she whispers, and I can tantalize her no more. I release her feet and withdraw my hand. Taking hold of her knee, I run my nose and lips down her thigh to my ultimate goal.
Ah!
She yells when my tongue swirls over her swollen clitoris. I slide two fingers inside her, pushing once, twice, and she lets out a boisterous cry, and her orgasm washes over me. I kiss her belly, her stomach between her breasts. Then I slowly sink into her as her climax dies. I love you, Anna, I whisper, and I start to move. Anna slumbers beside me, while above me, the tie from her robe is still attached to the bed spindles. I contemplate waking her and having my wicked way with her a third time, marveling that I still want more. Will I ever have enough of Anastasia Steele? But she needs to sleep. Tomorrow we go sailing, just the two of us and the Grace. She'll need her energy to help me on board. We'll be away from everyone for 3 whole days, enjoying our own July 4th celebration, and my hope is that I can finally relax, at least for a few days. My mind drifts to my dad and his surprise apology, to menus and party favors, to the crash and the unknown saboteur. I hope Reynolds and Ryan are okay outside. They're keeping watch. Anna's safe. We're safe. Tuesday, July 5th, 2011. Sitting at my desk and staring out at the distant sound, I can't help but notice the heartwarming glow that's emanating either from my skin or from somewhere deep inside my chest. It could be a combination of sea, sun, and wind from being aboard the Grace for the long weekend. Or it could be because I've spent 3 uninterrupted days with Anastasia. Despite all the vexing issues I've dealt with over the past few weeks, I've never felt as relaxed as I did with her on board my catamaran. Anna is food for my soul. Anastasia is fast asleep. The early morning light shimmers through the portholes, skimming over her tousled hair so that it gleams, burnished, and beautiful. Sitting down on the edge of the bed, I place a cup of tea on the nightstand as the Grace bobs gently on the water in Bowman Bay. I lean over and plant a tender kiss on her cheek.
Wake up, sleepyhead. I'm lonely.
She groans, but her expression softens. I kiss her again, and her eyes flutter open, and her face shines with a breathtaking smile. Reaching up, she caresses my cheek.
Good morning, husband-to-be.
Good morning, wife-to-be. I've made you tea.
She chuckles in disbelief, I think.
You dear man,
she says. This belongs on the list of firsts.
I believe it does.
And I can tell you're very pleased with yourself. Her grin mirrors mine.
Miss Steele, I am. I make an excellent cup of tea.
She sits up, and to my disappointment, pulls up the covers to conceal her naked breasts. She can't seem to stop grinning.
I'm so impressed. It's such a complicated process.
Indeed it is, I reply.
I had to boil the water and everything.
And dip the tea bag? Mr. Gray, you are so competent.
I laugh and narrow my eyes.
Are you belittling my tea-making skills?
She gasps in mock horror and clutches imaginary pearls. I wouldn't dare, she says, and reaching over, takes the cup.
Just checking.
A knock on my office door brings me back to the now. Andrea pops her head around the door.
Mr. Gray, your tailor is here.
Oh, great. Show him in.
I need a new suit for the wedding. Marco handles the company portfolio as well as our mergers and acquisitions. This morning, he's taking the senior team through GEH's latest additions to our shareholdings. We now own 25% of Blue Sea Tech, 34% of 15 Gen 4, and 66% of Lincoln Timber. I've been listening with half an ear, but my attention is momentarily piqued by that last piece of news. This is a long-term project of mine, and I'm pleased we now own a majority stake in Lincoln Timber through one of our shell companies. Link must need the money.
Interesting.
Revenge is a dish. Enough, Gray. Concentrate. Marco moves on to his latest list of potential acquisitions. There are two companies that he is especially keen to pursue. He's running through the pros while my mind strays to the weekend and Anna. Anna is at the helm of the Grace as we glide over the sparkling ocean, past Admiralty Head on Whidbey Island. Her hair is flying in the wind and glinting in the sun. Her smile could melt the hardest of hearts. It thawed mine. She looks beautiful, relaxed, free.
Hold her steady,
I shout over the rush of the sea.
Aye, aye, Captain. I mean, sir.
Anna bites her lip, and I know she's teasing me, as usual. She salutes when I give her a bogus scowl, and I go back to tightening the bowline, unable to hide my smile. Marco mentions a solar energy company that's struggling to find investment. An enticing aroma of batter and bacon welcomes me with open arms as I enter the galley. My girl is making pancakes. She's dressed in a t-shirt and far too short denim shorts, and her hair is in pigtails.
Good morning.
I wrap my arms around her, pressing her back to my front, and skim my lips down her neck. She smells so good. Of soap and warmth and sweet, sweet Anna.
Good morning, Mr. Gray.
She angles her head, giving me better access to her throat.
This takes me back.
I murmur against her skin and tug one of her pigtails. She giggles.
That seems a lifetime ago. These, however, are not cherry-popped by would-be dominant pancakes. These are Independence Day pancakes. Happy 4th of July.
There's no other way I'd like to celebrate than with pancakes.
I kiss her beneath her earlobe. Well, I can think of one way. I gently tug her pigtail once more.
You always get an A.
Christian,
Roz says, her tone abrupt. Seven pairs of eyes are all directed at me. Shit. I stare blankly back at Roz, ignoring everyone else, and tilt my head to one side.
What do you think?
She's barely disguising her irritation, and I assume this is not the first time she's asked. Come clean, Gray. I'm sorry, I was miles away. Her lips form a thin line, and she glances at Marco, who gives me a warm smile and proceeds to give me an executive summary of what he's just outlined. Okay, I respond when he's finished. Let's go after Gio Lamara. They could be a worthwhile addition to the energy division. We need to widen our footprint in green energy. The others? I shake my head. We should consolidate. Let's concentrate on Gio Lamara. Send me all the details. Will do.
We need a decision on the Taiwan shipyard. They are eager for a response from us.
Roz looks pointedly at me. I read the impact assessment.
And?
This is a gamble.
It is,
she acknowledges. But everything in life is a gamble, and at least as a joint venture, we'll share the risk, and it might secure the future of the shipyard here. Roz and Marco nod. Let's move this forward. I'll get the team on that, Marco says. Good. I think that's it. Thank you, everyone. They all rise, except for Roz.
Can I have a quick word?
She asks.
Sure.
She waits until everyone leaves. Well, and I wait for her to chastise me for my daydreaming.
Woods has withdrawn his legal threats. We're all good.
That's not what I was expecting you to say.
I know. Honestly, Christian, it's like you're on your honeymoon already.
Honeymoon? I haven't even thought about a honeymoon. Shit, something else to organize. Roz scoffs.
You'd better get on it.
She shakes her head.
I know I'd whisk Gwen away to Europe.
I'm surprised by Roz's candor. She rarely discusses her home life, although I know she has a domestic partnership with Gwen. Frequent attempts to legalize gay marriage in Washington have been thwarted. I make a mental note to talk to Senator Blandino about this when we next meet. Surely she can apply some pressure to the governor and help push this agenda. I thought Anna and I might stay somewhere near Bellevue overnight. We're both working.
Gray, you can do better than that.
Roz screws up her face in mock disgust as she starts to gather her papers together. I laugh. Yes, I can. And what's more, I'll have fun figuring out what to do. Europe, you say. Anna's always wanted to see Europe, England especially. Roz's lips twitch into a benevolent smile as she stands.
Good luck with that.
Her parting words echo through the empty room, leaving me to contemplate where the hell I'm going to take the future Mrs. Gray for a honeymoon. I hope she has a passport. Back in my office, I check my computer, and there's an email from Anna that she sent an hour ago.
From Anastasia Steele to Christian Gray, July 5th, 2011, 9:54. Jibbing and jibing, bowlines and halyards. My darling Mr. Gray, what a spectacular weekend. The best July 4th ever. Thank you. I am also giving you advance notice that I will be staying at my apartment with Kate on Friday. I will be packing so I can move in with you on Saturday. But I should warn you, this will be a girls-only evening, so your presence will not be required, but much missed. Maybe you can write your vows. Just an idea. Laters, baby. A. Kiss, kiss, kiss.
From Christian Gray to Anastasia Steele. July 5th, 2011, 1103. Abandoning ship. My darling fiancé, thank you for the most relaxed July 4th I've ever experienced. I will miss you on Friday, but we'll help you move in on Saturday. You make my dreams come true. I will consider my vows and maybe write a few. I did not mean that to rhyme. Christian Grey, CEO and poet. P.S. Do you possess a passport? From Anastasia Steele to Christian Grey, July 5th, 2011, 1114. Citizen of the USA. Dear poet, I'd stick to high finance if I were you, though I'm glad your dreams doth come true. I'm thrilled and honored to report I do possess a new passport. Now you have me thinking, why? Are we off someplace to fly? I'd love to travel the world with you, not as one, but as two. Curious of Seattle, kiss, kiss, kiss. And not a poet, as you can tell.
My future wife is a dreadful poet. Grinning at her response, I grab my gym bag and head out of the office and down to the basement to face Bastille. Fresh from the gym, I finish my chicken salad sandwich at my desk and pick up the phone. It's time to call Elliot. I've been putting this off because I know he'll give me shit. Hotshot, what gives? Hello, Elliot. How are you? He laughs. Jesus, man, you sound bored as fuck. Why is this so difficult? I'm not bored. I'm working and taking some time out to talk to you. Now you sound pissed. I am. Something I said? He cackles over the line, and I'm tempted to hang up and try again later. I take a deep breath. I need to ask you something. About the new house? No. Game on, Gray. Ask him. Spit it out, man, he says when I don't respond. This is like waiting for concrete to cure. Will you be my best man? There, it's done, and there's a deafening silence on the other end of the phone, save for his quick gasp. Shit. Is he going to say no? Elliot?
Sure,
he says with uncharacteristic brevity. I'd be honored. He sounds stunned. Why? Surely he knew this was coming. Good. Thank you. My relief is clear in my voice. He laughs, and I know my brother has recovered his dickwad humor.
Of course! This means I get to organize your goddamned bachelor party!
He whoops like a deranged gorilla. Bachelor party? He's got to be kidding. Whatever, Elliot. An idea pops into my head. Come over Friday. We can shoot some pool. Anna is spending the evening with Kate. Yeah, I heard. Sure thing, we can talk strippers and where we'll leave you handcuffed at the end of a drunken night. I laugh because he has no idea.
We?
I ask.
I know you have no friends, you fucking recluse. I'll drum up a posse who know how to party.
Oh no. Let's talk Friday, I respond.
Can't wait. By the way, have you been in touch with Gia?
Yes, I have. Anna and I had a look at her portfolio online. We both liked what we saw. Ms. Mateo was going with the real estate agent to check out the property so that when we meet, she knows what we are talking about.
I need to see this place too, Hotshot.
I know. Let's do it Friday, after work.
Rad. Sounds good.
Okay. Laters, Elliot. An unexpected surge of warmth fills my chest. And, thank you.
What are brothers for? So, this is your new office, Hotshot.
Elliot strolls through the door as laid back as his tone.
Do you have to call me that? Leliot?
I stress his nickname and wave him toward my white leather couch.
It's what you are. Look at this place.
He waves a hand in the direction of my outer office. Wearing jeans, a t-shirt, and his Aztec jacket from San Diego State, he looks like the proverbial fish out of water here. I sit down opposite him and notice that his knee is bouncing to a crazy beat and he's avoiding eye contact. What the hell? He's nervous. I don't think I've ever seen him this way.
What is it?
I ask. He shuffles in his seat and presses his hands together.
I want to start my own construction company.
He blurts out the words in a rush.
Ah,
you're looking for investment.
His vibrant blue eyes finally meet mine.
Yes,
he says with a steeliness that surprises me.
How much do you need?
About 100K? I smirk at the irony. That's what I started my business with.
It's yours.
Elliot balks.
You're not going to ask for a business plan, a pitch?
No. You may be an utter fucking asshole sometimes, but you work hard. I see that. You're passionate about what you do. This is your dream, and I believe in it too. We should all be striving for sustainable living. Besides, you're my brother, and what are brothers for?
When Elliot smiles, he lights up a room.
Feeling uncomfortable at the sudden swell of feelings for my brother, I dial Welch's number for an update on his investigation. Night shrouds my study at Escala. I've been poring over the documents Marcus sent me regarding Gio Lamara. Based in Nevada, their solar farms are already producing enough kilowattage to light up 2 neighboring towns. They have the expertise to bring cheaper renewable energy to other parts of the U.S. I think they have a great deal of potential. I'm excited to acquire the company and see what we can add to their business model. I email Marcus to confirm my enthusiastic interest, then go find Anna. She's in the library, curled up in her armchair, laptop on her knees, and Snow Patrol playing quietly over the sound system. I assume she's working on an upcoming book, and it occurs to me that we should get her a desk and chair in here.
Hi,
I say when she looks up.
Hi.
She smiles.
Are you reading another manuscript?
I'm doing the first draft of my vows.
I see. I saunter into the room. How's that going?
It's intimidating, Mr. Gray. A little like you.
Intimidating? Moi? I press my hand to my chest and feign surprise. She purses her lips to hide her smile.
It's your specialty.
Settling into the armchair beside Anna's, I lean toward her, my elbows resting on my knees.
Oh, I thought I had other specialties.
Even from this distance, I catch a whisper of her fragrance. Pure Anna. It's intoxicating. A pretty pink stains her cheeks.
Well, yes, you are blessed with other specialties, this is true.
She closes her laptop, tucks her feet beneath her, and raises her chin with the air of a prim, old-fashioned schoolteacher. I laugh. I know better. Anna has an inner freak. As long as you promise to love, honor, and obey, I'm sure your vows will be perfect. Anna laughs.
Christian, I'm not promising to obey you.
What? She thinks I'm joking?
No way,
she says simply. What do you mean you're not going to obey? My stomach feels like it's dropped 20 feet. I meant my comment to be an amusing quip, but I'm thrown by her response. Anna flicks her hair over her shoulder, and it captures the light from the table lamp, highlighting the few red and gold strands. It's beautiful, distracting me, but my attention shifts to her mouth. Her lips flatten into a stubborn line as she folds her arms and straightens her shoulders in that way she does when she's gearing up for a fight.
Hell, she's going to argue with me?
You can't be serious. I'll love and honor you always, Christian. But obey? I don't think so.
Why not? I'm perfectly serious.
Because it's the 21st century.
And? How can she oppose me on this? The conversation is not going the way I expected.
Well, I'd hope that we could come to some consensus on issues within our marriage through discussion. You know, communicating with each other.
She continues. I'm hoping for that too, but if we can't and we reach an impasse and you go off and put yourself in unnecessary danger. All manner of horrific scenarios flit through my mind, and unease spawns exponentially in my gut. Her face softens as she relaxes, her eyes glowing with understanding.
Christian, you always think the worst. You worry too much.
She reaches out to stroke my face, her fingers soft and gentle against my skin.
Anna, I need this, I whisper.
With a heavy sigh, she withdraws her hand and stares at me, as if she's trying to convey a message via telepathy.
Christian, I'm not religious, but our wedding vows will be sacred, and I'm not prepared to make a vow I might break.
Her response is a gut punch, echoing Carrick's words when he lectured me about Elena. We are talking about the sanctity of marriage, and if you have no respect for that, then you have no business being married. I stare at her as my anxiety boils over into frustration.
Anastasia, be reasonable.
She shakes her head.
Christian, you be reasonable. You know you have a tendency to overreact. The answer's no.
Me? Overreact? I glare at her, and for the first time in a long while, I don't know what to say.
You're just tense about the wedding, she says, gently. We both are.
I'm a hell of a lot more tense, knowing you're not willing to obey. Anna, reconsider, please. I sweep my hand through my hair and stare into her big blue eyes, but I see nothing except her determination and courage. She's not budging. Fuck. This is getting us nowhere, and the grasp on my temper is slipping. It's time to back away before I say something I regret. I get up and try one last attempt. Think about it. But for now, I have some work to finish. And before she can stop me, I leave the library and head back into my study, trying to think of some way to get her to see sense. One of us has to be in charge, for fuck's sake. I stomp over to my desk and slump into my chair, feeling blindsided by her attitude and resentful that I'm only now finding out that she won't obey. To hell with it. I'll have to make her see reason. How? Shit. I'm too wound up to think clearly, so I shelve my frustration and open my computer to look through my emails. The good news is that my new sailplane will be arriving from Germany next week. It's being shipped to my hangar at the port of Ifrida. I allow myself a moment of excitement, a glider built for two. I want to run and tell Anna, but right now I'm mad at her. Damn. It's depressing. To cheer myself up, I reread the specs for the new aircraft, and when I've exhausted all there is to read, I get back to my financial reports. A tentative knock interrupts me. Come in. Anna pokes her head around the door.
It's nearly midnight,
she says with a winsome smile. She eases the door open and stands on the threshold dressed in one of her satin nightgowns. The soft material caresses her body, molding itself to every curve and dip, leaving nothing to my imagination. My mouth dries and my body responds, hot and heavy with longing.
Are you coming to bed?
She whispers. I ignore my arousal. I have a few more things to do.
Okay.
She smiles, and I half smile in return, because I love her. But I'm not going to concede on this. She has to come to her senses. Anna turns to leave, but gives me a quick, provocative look over her shoulder before closing the door and leaving. Once more, I'm on my own. Hell, I want her. But she won't obey, and that's pissed me off. Big time. I turn back to the latest figures from Barney's division at GEH. They're not nearly as seductive as the delectable and disobedient Miss Steele. Wednesday, July 6th, 2011. Anna is fast asleep when I crawl into bed beside her. Ever thoughtful, she's left my bedside light switched on so I won't be lost in the dark. And yet, that's exactly how I feel. Lost. And if I'm being honest, discouraged. Why can't she understand? It's not that big a deal, is it? Is it? watching her lovely, tranquil face and the steady rise and fall of her breasts as she sleeps, an ugly undercurrent looms beneath my ribs. It's envy. I'm lying here, bewildered and miserable, and she's sleeping like she hasn't the care in the world. But would I want her any other way? Of course not. I want her happy, and I want to protect her. But how can I do that if she's not willing to obey me? Deal with it, Gray. Sighing, I lean over and brush her hair with my lips. It's the gentlest of touches, as I don't want to wake her. But I silently implore her to change her mind. Please, Anna, grant me this. Switching off the light, I stare unflinching into the dark, and suddenly the silence in the room is deafening and oppressive. My heart rate doubles and I'm dragged down into a swamp of despair. It's overwhelming. Maybe this is a huge mistake. Our marriage is never going to work if she can't do this. What was I thinking? Maybe I want, no, need someone more submissive. I need to be in control. Always. Without control, there is chaos and anger and hurt and fear and pain. Shit. What am I going to do? This is an impossible hurdle to overcome, isn't it? But living without Anna would be unbearable. I know what it's like to bathe in her light. She is warmth and life and home. She is everything. I want her by my side. I love her. How can I get her to reconsider? I rub my face, trying to fend off my bleak thoughts. Get a grip, Gray. She'll come around. I close my eyes and try to utilize Dr. Flynn's mindfulness exercises and find my happy place. Maybe a flowery bower in a boathouse. I'm walking on air, soaring high in the sky above Ephrata. The Washington landscape is a patchwork beneath me. I wing over and marvel at the quilt of browns and blues and greens crisscrossed by roads and irrigation canals. Catching a thermal, I rise above a ridge on the Beasley Hills. The sky is unencumbered, a dazzling, shimmering blue, and I'm at peace. The wind, my companion. Constant, rushing, the only sound. I am alone, alone, alone. I wing over again, my world turned upside down, and Anna is in front of the cockpit, her hands stretched out to the canopy, squealing with joy and wonder. My heart is brimming. This is happiness. This is love. This is what it feels like. I bank. And suddenly I'm in a tailspin. Anna's disappeared. I stamp my feet, but the rudder's gone. I fight the control stick, but the ailerons don't respond. I have no control. All I hear is the roar of the wind and someone screaming. We're going down. Fuck. Spinning. Down. 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 Shit. I'm going to hit the ground. No. No. I wake with a start. Fuck. I'm wrapped around Anna, and she's threading her fingers through my hair. Her scent is soothing, and it's filling the desperate emptiness that's deep in my soul. Good morning, she says, and immediately I'm calmer. Back to earth. Good morning, I whisper, confused. I normally wake before Anna.
You were having a bad dream.
What time is it?
It's just after 7:30.
Shit, I'm late. I give her a brief, chaste kiss and bound out of bed.
Christian,
she calls. I can't stop. I'm late. I mutter as I disappear into the bathroom, recalling her defiance from last night. And I'm still pissed. At my desk, I eye the model glider that Anastasia gave me when she left. It took me a whole day to make. Unease circles my gut. Maybe it's the echo of that dream or a reminder of the desolation I felt when she was gone. I touch the wingtip, holding the cool plastic between my thumb and forefinger. I never want to feel like that again. Ever. I shake off the feeling and take a sip of the espresso that Andrea has prepared, followed by a bite of fresh croissant. I glance at my iMac to see an email has arrived from Anna.
From Anastasia Steele to Christian Gray, July 6th, 2011, 922. Eat. My dearest husband-to-be, it is not like you to skip breakfast. I missed you. I hope you're not hungry. I know how disagreeable that is for you. I hope your day is a good one. A. Kiss, kiss, kiss.
I'm comforted by the number of small X's at the end of her message, but I glance at her portrait on my office wall, close the email, and summon Andrea into my office to go through my schedule. I'm still pissed. After lunch, I'm in the elevator returning from an external meeting with Eamon Cavanaugh when I check my BlackBerry. There's another email from Anna.
From Anastasia Steele to Christian Gray, July 6, 2011, 1427. Are you okay? My dearest husband-to-be, it's not like you not to reply. The last time you didn't reply, your helicopter went missing. Let me know you're okay. Anna, worried of SIP.
Shit. A twinge of guilt flares in my stomach, especially as there is a distinct lack of kisses on her note. For fuck's sake. I'm mad at you, Anastasia. But I don't want her to worry. I type out a brief reply. From Christian Gray to Anastasia Steele, July 6, 2011, 1432. Are you okay? I'm fine. Busy. Christian Gray, CEO. I press send and hope my response will alleviate her worries. Andrea eyes me warily when I exit the elevator into the outer office. Yes? I snap.
It's nothing, Mr. Gray. I just wanted to know if you wanted any coffee?
Where's Sarah?
She's photocopying the reports you requested.
Good. And no thanks to coffee. I add in a softer tone. Why am I being an asshole to my staff? Get me Welch on the line. She nods and picks up the phone. Thanks. I mumble and head into my office. I slouch into my chair and stare despondently out of the window. The day is bright, unlike my mood. My phone buzzes. Gray.
I have Anastasia Steele on the line for you.
Shit, is she okay? Put her through.
Hi.
Her voice wavers, soft and breathy. She sounds uncertain and sad, and a chill grips my heart. What is it? Are you okay? I ask.
I'm fine. It's you I'm worried about.
My relief turns to irritation. My worry is misplaced. I'm fine, but busy.
Let's talk when you get home.
Okay. I reply, knowing that I'm being abrupt. She doesn't respond, but I hear her breathing on the other end of the line. She sounds unsettled, and the chill I felt a moment earlier is replaced by a familiar homesickness. What is it, Anna? What do you want to say? Silence stretches between us, full of recrimination and unspoken truths.
Christian,
she says eventually. Anastasia, I have things to do. I have to go.
Tonight,
she whispers. Tonight. I hang up and scowl at the phone. It's not too much to ask, Anastasia. Home? Taylor asks as he takes the wheel of the Audi. Sure, I murmur, distracted. Part of me doesn't want to go home. I still don't have a coherent argument to persuade Anna to change her mind, and I have work to do this evening. A reading project, two weighty reports from the Environmental Sciences Department at WSU, results from the test sites in Africa, and Professor Gravitt's paper on the microbe responsible for nitrogen fixation in soils. Apparently, microbes are essential to soil regeneration, and regeneration holds the key to carbon sequestration. Later this week, I'll be reviewing my funding to her department. Perhaps I should take Anna out and we can discuss her vows at dinner. Maybe I can sway her over a glass of wine. I'm reminded of our dinner to discuss the DS contract. Hell, that didn't go to plan. Feeling glum, I stare through the privacy glass at the jostling tourists and commuters, and a sense of righteous indignation settles over me. I'm not asking for much, for fuck's sake. It's the only thing that I want. She can have whatever she likes. Knowing that she'll obey me will give me a sense of security. Does she not understand? On the sidewalk, a young man in shades and loud, flowery shorts is arguing with a woman in an equally loud dress. Their fight is attracting disconcerted looks from passers-by. That will be Anna and me tonight. I know it. And the thought depresses me even more. I'll just have to tell her what it means to me. I need to keep her safe. Yes, she'll see. The woman turns, and in a dramatic gesture, raises her arms and storms off, leaving the man alone and bewildered on the sidewalk. I think he's drunk. Asshole. Maybe I could fuck Anna into agreeing. That might work. The thought gives me a modicum of hope, and I settle back into my seat for the rest of the drive to Escala.
Good evening, Mr. Gray.
Mrs. Jones chimes as I enter the living room. From the enticing aroma, I know there's a pot of her delicious bolognese sauce bubbling on the stove. My mouth waters. Hello, Gail. Smells good. Where's Anna?
I believe she's in the library, sir.
Thank you.
Dinner in half an hour?
Works for me. Thanks. I'll have time for a quick run on the treadmill since I missed my workout this morning. I head to the bedroom to change, avoiding the library. The boss blares in my ears as I push my body to its limits. I run 3 miles in 20 minutes, and I'm a panting, hot mess when I come off the treadmill. Dragging air into my lungs and using the back of my hand to wipe the sweat that's pouring off my brow, I bend over to catch my breath and stretch my hamstrings. It feels good. When I stand, Anastasia is leaning against the frame in the doorway, watching me, eyes wide and wary. She's wearing a pale gray sleeveless shirt and a tight gray skirt. She looks every bit the publishing executive, but young, so young, and miserable. Shit.
Hi,
she says. Hi, I respond between breaths.
You didn't say hello when you came in. Are you avoiding me?
Anna does not beat around the bush, and in that moment, I want to banish the look of misery on her face and her wariness. I needed to exercise. I pant. I can say hello now. I open my arms and step toward her, knowing full well I'm soaked with sweat. Anna laughs, grimacing, and raises her palms.
I'll take a rain check.
I bound up to her and pull her into my arms before she can retreat. She shrieks, shrinking from me, but she's laughing too, and it's like a weight has lifted from my soul. I love making her laugh. Oh, baby, I missed you. I kiss her, not caring that I'm not fit for human consumption, and to my delight, she kisses me back. Her fingers tighten around my shoulders, her fingernails digging deeper into my flesh as our tongues dance the dance they know so well. We're both winded when we come up for air. I cradle her face and brush my thumb over her swollen lips, staring into her dazed, beautiful eyes. Anna, I whisper, imploring her. Change your vows. Obey. Don't argue with me. I hate it when we argue. Please. My lips hover above hers, waiting for an answer, but she blinks several times as if she's clearing a haze, then shrugs me off and steps out of my embrace.
No, Christian. Please,
she says, condensing her frustration into 4 syllables. I drop my hands to my sides as her words douse me with a cold splash of reality.
If this is a deal breaker for you, please tell me.
She continues, her voice rising steadily.
Because it is for me, and I can stop trying to organize our wedding and go back to my apartment and get drunk with Kate.
You'd leave?
My voice is barely audible. Her statement has knocked my world off kilter.
Right now, yes. You're behaving like a spoiled teen.
That's not fair, I retort. I need this.
No, you don't. You just think you do. We're supposed to be grown-ups, for heaven's sake. We'll talk things out, like adults do.
We gaze at each other, over the gulf between us. She's not budging. Fuck. I need a shower, I mutter, and she steps out of my way to let me pass. When I enter the living room, Anna is seated at the kitchen counter, where there are two places laid for dinner. Gail hovers over the stove. I'm not hungry, I announce, and I have work to do. Anna frowns and opens her mouth as if to say something, but shuts it again as I walk past her. I don't miss the look that passes between her and Mrs. Jones. Are they conspiring? The thought makes my blood boil, so I storm into my study and slam the door. Shit. The noise startles me, and it's an abrupt wake-up. I am behaving like a spoiled teen. Anna's right. Hell. And I'm hungry. I hate being hungry. A dark, twisted memory of fear and hunger from before I was Christian Grey threatens to resurface, but I dampen it down. Don't go there, Grey. The reports are on my desk where Taylor left them. I sit down, pick up the first one, and start to read. A gentle knock pulls my attention away from the multiple crop rotations we're trying in Ghana, and my heart stutters. Anna. Come in. Gail opens the door. My disappointment is real, my momentary excitement now a sad, deflated balloon that's lost its helium. On the plus side, she's carrying a tray with a bowl of steaming pasta. She says nothing as she places it on my desk. Thank you.
Anna's idea. She knows you love spaghetti bolognese.
Her tone is clipped, and before I can reply, she turns and leaves, taking her disapproval with her. I scowl at her departing figure. Of course it was Anna's idea. And once again, I'm in awe of her thoughtfulness. Why isn't that enough? She says she loves me, so why do I want or need her obedience? Feeling even more morose, I stare at the long shadows and golden pink hues painted across my study walls by the sun as it sinks into the horizon. Why does she defy me? I pick up my fork and dig into my meal, twirling the pasta into a big, solid bite of bliss. It's delicious. Anna has left the lamp on for me again. She's fast asleep, and as I slide into the bed beside her, my body comes alive. I hunger for her. I contemplate my plan to fuck her into agreeing, but deep down I know she's made up her mind. She might say no, and right now I don't think I'd survive the rejection. I turn onto my side, away from her, and switch off my light. The room is plunged into darkness, reflecting my mood. I'm more miserable now than I was this morning. Damn. Why did I let this get so out of hand? I close my eyes.
Mommy? Mommy! Mommy is asleep on the floor. She has been asleep for a long time. I brush your hair because she likes that. She doesn't wake up. I shake her. Mommy! My tummy hurts. It's hungry. He isn't here. I am thirsty. In the kitchen, I pull a chair to the sink and I have a drink. The water splashes over my blue sweater. Mommy is still asleep. Mommy, wake up! She lies still. She is cold. I fetch my blankie, and I cover Mommy, and I lie down on the sticky green rug beside her. Mommy is still asleep. I have two toy cars. They race by the floor where Mommy is sleeping. I think Mommy is sick. I search for something to eat. In the icebox, I find peas. They are cold. I eat them slowly. They make my tummy hurt. I sleep beside Mommy. The peas are gone. In the freezer is something. It smells funny. I lick it and my tongue is stuck to it. I eat it slowly. It tastes nasty. I drink some water. I play with my cars and I sleep beside Mommy. Mommy is so cold and she won't wake up. The door crashes open. I cover Mommy with my blankie. He's here.
Fuck, what the fuck happened here? Oh, the crazy fucked up bitch. Shit. Get out of my way, you little shit.
He kicks me, and I hit my head on the floor. My head hurts. He calls somebody, and he goes. He locks the door. I lay down beside Mommy. My head hurts. The lady policeman is here. No, no, no. Don't touch me. Don't touch me. Don't touch me. I stay by Mommy. No, stay away from me. The lady policeman has my blankie and she grabs me. I scream. Mommy, Mommy, I want my Mommy. The words are gone. I can't say the words. Mommy can't hear me. I have no words.
Christian, Christian.
Her voice is urgent, pulling me from the depths of my nightmare and my despair.
I'm here, I'm here,
she cries. I wake, and Anna's leaning over me, grasping my shoulders, shaking me, her face taut with anguish, eyes wide and brimming with tears. Anna. My voice is a hoarse whisper, the taste of fear tarnishing my mouth. You're here.
Of course I'm here.
I had a dream.
I know, I'm here, I'm here.
Anna. Her name is an incantation on my lips, a talisman against the dark, choking panic coursing through my body.
Hush, I'm here.
She curls around me, her limbs cocooning mine, her warmth seeping into my soul, forcing back the shadows, forcing back the fear. She is sunshine. She is light. She is mine. Please, let's not fight. I wrap my arms around her.
Okay.
The vows, no obeying. I can do that. We'll find a way. The words rush out of my mouth in a tumble of emotion and confusion and anxiety.
Yes, we will. We'll always find a way.
Anna whispers, and her lips are on mine, silencing me, bringing me back to the now. Friday, July 8th, 2011. Dr. Flynn rubs his chin, and I don't know if he's playing for time or genuinely intrigued. She threatened to leave. Yes. Seriously? Yes. So you capitulated. I didn't have much choice. Christian, you always have a choice. Do you think Anastasia was being unreasonable? I meet his gaze and want to shout yes, but deep down I know Anna isn't an unreasonable person. That's you, Gray.
Unreasonable could be your middle name.
Anna's words haunt me. She said that long ago. Christ, my negativity is a real prick sometimes. How are you feeling now? Flynn asks.
Wary,
I whisper. And my admission is a jab to the solar plexus, almost winding me. She could leave me. Ah, your feelings of insecurity and abandonment are coming to the fore again. I remain mute, distracted by the sliver of afternoon light that brightens the cluster of mini orchids on his coffee table. What can I say? I don't want to admit this out loud. It makes my fears real. I loathe feeling this weak, this exposed. Anna has the power to wound me and deliver a fatal blow. Is it giving you second thoughts about the wedding? John asks. No. Maybe. I'm afraid she'll hurt me. like she did before, when she left. No, I answer, because I don't want to lose her. He nods, as if this is what he wants to hear. You've relinquished a great deal for her. I have. I stifle my indulgent smile. She's a good negotiator. Flynn rubs his chin again. Do you resent that? Yes, partly. I've given so much, and she won't give me this. You sound like you're mad at her. I am. Have you thought about telling her that? How mad I am? No. Why not? I'm worried I'll say something I'll regret, and she'll leave. She left once before. But you hurt her then. I did. The memory of her tearful face and her bitter rebuke are never far from my mind. You are one fucked up son of a bitch. I shudder, but I hide it from Flynn. Whenever I think of that time, my shame almost swallows me whole. I don't want to hurt her again. Ever. That's a good goal to work toward, Flynn says. But you need to find a healthy way to express and channel your anger. You've directed it inwardly for so long. Too long. He pauses. But you know my views on that. I'm not going to rehash that now, Christian. You're incredibly resilient and resourceful. You had the solution to this impasse all along. You capitulated. Problem solved. Life is not always going to go your way. The key is to recognize those moments. Sometimes it's better to concede the battle to win the war. Communicate and compromise. That's what marriage is all about. I snort, remembering Anna's email from a lifetime ago. What's so funny? Nothing. I shake my head. Have a little faith in yourself and in her. Marriage is a huge leap of faith, I mumble. It is for everyone. But you're well-equipped to cope. Focus on where you want to be, how you want to be. I think you have over the last few weeks. You've seemed happier. I meet his gaze. This is just a small setback, he says. I hope so. I'll see you next week. It's dusk, and Elliot and I are standing on the terrace of the new house, admiring the view. I can see why you bought the place. Elliot whistles his appreciation through his teeth. We're both quiet for a moment, absorbing the majesty of twilight over the sound. The opal sky, the distant orange haze, the dark purple waters, the beauty, the calm. Stunning, isn't it? I murmur. Yep, this is a great spot for a beautiful home, which you're going to remodel. I grin, and Elliot play punches my arm. Glad I can help. It's gonna take some hard work, and it ain't gonna be cheap to make this place more sustainable. But hey, you can afford it. I'll talk to Gia next week and see what she has in mind and if it's possible. I'll close on this sometime before the end of July. I think Anna, you, Gia, and I should meet here once that's done. Do it before. Doesn't sound like the results of any survey will stop you from buying this place. You're right. I'll look at my schedule. When do you think you might have time? For what? The build, dude. The build. Ah, well, if the Spokane Eden project stays on schedule, maybe early fall? He shrugs. It's going well? Yeah. Elliot looks pleased with himself. He should. It's an ambitious project, and once complete, it will be a showcase for his sustainable building methods. He shoves his Seahawks cap back on his head and claps his hands. TGIF, hotshot. Let's get back to your place and get our beer on. Rolling my eyes, I follow my big brother around the side of the house to where my car is parked in the driveway. I wonder what our women are doing, Elliot says on the drive back to Escala. Packing up Anna's things, I hope. I glance at Elliot. He's got his fucking foot on my dashboard, and he's watching the passing scenery as if he doesn't give a shit. Lord, I envy him. They're probably eating pizza, drinking too much wine, and talking about us. He quips. I hope they're not talking about us.
Or they could be watching the game. He cackles. Kate into baseball? Yeah, she likes all sports. Of course she does. I'm once more confounded by why she and Anna are friends. Anna doesn't seem interested in sports at all, though we both enjoyed watching the Mariners recently. So do you think of Kate as your woman, then? I ask, curious. Yeah, for now. It's not serious between you. He shrugs. She's cool. We'll see. She doesn't hassle me, you know? I don't know, thank God. I mutter to myself and shake my head. This might be the longest relationship he's ever experienced. Let's stop at a bar, he says. No, I'm not drinking and driving. Dude, you're driving like Dad. Fuck off, asshole. I put my foot down and the R8 screeches up the on-ramp onto I-5 and we speed toward the city. Have you found the prick who totaled your chopper? I sigh. Helicopter, Elliot, and no, it's really pissing me off. Man, who would want to do that? I don't know. My team has turned up zilch. I'm waiting for the report from the NTSB. They're taking their sweet time. I've had to up our security. I've got two guys watching Anna and Kate's place.